welcome back for the last time, and I'm going to want to do an individual check-in with each person. The topic of today's is very different from what we've done before. The previous four sessions have focused on how we orient ourselves when we offer the gift of feedback to others. And today the topic is how we interact with feedback that wants to come to us when we are on the receiving end of feedback. So I would like to do an open check-in where you can reflect on the question of what it's like for you to receive feedback, where you're challenged about it, and or where you've had a success in finding the gift of what somebody else is offering when it may look like criticism. Is anyone feeling ready to start?
I just had the bounty of feedback from my daughter. We met for her to give it to me. I had been asking for it for some time because I knew there was something. Before going, I listened to your voice, your caring and loving voice, talking about feedback and also empathy. I found that going with a heart open to hearing what it was like for her was really, really helpful, because then feedback that I received could be seen as a way of connecting us.
Yeah. So I understand what you're saying, and it sounds like that actually worked.
It really did for me. She commented on, like, we've been visiting for years, but we haven't lived in the same place for 20 years. So she was still expecting me to react in a way that I might have 20 years ago, or certainly pre-NVC. So she commented that the defensiveness wasn't there, and that helped her to open up, and it helped her to even do self-examination a little, you know. But while I was there, I was thinking, thank you, Mickey, because it had a lot to do with that loving tone, that just that whole caring tone. And I realize this is not a work situation, but
yeah.
I think with another human being that's where we're at, where it's a loving engagement that we're talking about.
Thank you. What I'm hearing from you is that you really got to experience how when we transcend the idea that we have to protect and defend and fend off or something, and then we open to what the other person brings, then it can become a gift of connection.
Yes.
Thank you.
I think the thing about feedback that is often a challenge for me is actually receiving feedback that might be considered to be praise, because most often people don't give you specific information. They label you in some way as good or smart or efficient or something, and I haven't found a way of asking for specific information to make the feedback more useful. I mean, because I'm thinking primarily of non-workplace situations, so it would be harder for me in personal situations to ask for that, because I know it's challenging for people to provide it.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I'm very happy to address this when we're done with this circle. Is that all, or is there more?
Well, I guess feedback in the workplace that I have received in the past that, you know, was in some way requesting my behavior to change was only challenging if it was something that was I wasn't braced for. No one asked me if it was a good time to talk. But it's always, on reflection, it's always a gift. Even before discovering NVC.
Yeah, NVC did not invent the need for autonomy or the need for consideration or the need for mattering. NVC gives those names. The dynamics have existed before NVC was born. Thank you.
I have two things to say, Mickey. I am often in a teaching situation, so I get a lot of wonderful feedback, which I don't have any trouble receiving. And I do try to find out at those times what it is that I've done that has met the need of whoever it is saying something positive about my work. Mm. But now the other side of the coin is I have been in work situations in the past where the feedback has been unexpected and shockingly negative from somebody who had, you might say, power over me in a work situation. And it involved several people, and I felt isolated and helpless. Mm-hmm. So I want to throw that in, and I was so glad to have this opportunity in this class to work with that.
Great.
So I want to echo what the last participant just said, in that when I'm getting positive feedback, it's fun and delightful, and there's a deep sense of rapport, and everything's hunky-dunky. But then there are some times when it just doesn't seem like a gift. It's as though I'm being dumped on, negative feedback, or I'm doing something in a way that is not understandable to other people, like the way I do things or how I'm approaching something. There's a breakdown in rapport usually happens first, and then there's a buildup of all sorts of negative feedback that comes out in one dump about a whole bunch of things instead of like a clear space and how are we doing together. And as soon as the rapport is broken, in other words, then the opportunity for miscommunication, misunderstanding, stories and untrue thoughts and all sorts of made-up stuff gets in the way. And
it's almost like breakdown in rapport is like a culture dish for microorganisms.
Yeah, so just staying clear with people would be my ultimate goal.
Quick question to be able to contextualize this. In those situations, did you know right away that there was breakdown in rapport?
I knew ahead of time.
Okay, thanks. And there was something else you were trying to say.
That was my roundabout way of saying it. Yeah, it's frustrating. It's, you know, when it gets to that point, it doesn't even seem to be repairable sometimes. Ill will and bad feelings and bad taste in people's mouths that lingers. Doesn't seem to ever clear and get back to a place of real warmth and caring. There's always like, ooh, that breakdown of trust kind of thing.
Thank you.
Well, feedback for me has been good when it's been specific and it's one-on-one and I can do something about it. In a work situation, you know, if I'm given feedback about, for instance, that I need to report more fully or more often, I feel like I can do something, and it's specific. And when it's been challenging for me has been when it's unexpected, and I'm unprepared for it. And interestingly, it's been most challenging for me when it's happened a couple of times when I'm working with a group and I'm singled out for feedback, and at times it's gone beyond my control. In other words, I can't really do anything about it. And that's very, very challenging for me. I don't quite know what to do with it.
And do they ask you, or does it just happen?
It just happens.
You don't see a place in the set of interactions where you can say, wait a minute, this is turning into feedback for me, and I'm not sure that I am game for that right now.
Right.
I'd like to slow down. That doesn't seem like an option.
I don't experience that as an option. I think because part of it is when it's a group, and also it's unexpected for me, and I close down within myself at that point.
Yeah, so in the face of what you perceive as expectations, you disappear.
I disappear then. I try to.
Okay, great. Anyone who at this point has something to add will hear from you.
When I was listening to the last person speaking, I remembered a situation where I was working that I had found very challenging. It would be nice if it never happened again. If it did, I would still have no clue as to how to handle it. And Part of it was the situation where a manager a couple of levels above me went into a rant in a meeting, and his rant was directed at me. So I had no idea what to do with that in the moment. And later, I did try to get information from him because I really didn't understand what had upset him so much. And I didn't get any information. I never understood why that happened and what it was all about. Some way of managing a situation like that would be really helpful.
Great. So I would like to address as many of the questions as were brought up as I can track and make room for, and then probably do a little role play, which I think might be fun. First, I want to address the possibly simple piece that has to do with how to make positive feedback useful, either in a work situation or in a personal situation. We can have an open conversation. Anyone can speak as if we are all in the same room. And I want to ask first, can you remember, you know, talking about specifics, can you remember a specific example of where somebody has given you positive feedback where you wanted to hear the specifics and didn't know how to ask for it?
Unfortunately, I don't think I'd be able to give you enough information that would be helpful. I remember being told that you're so great. You're so great.
Okay, wonderful. That's good enough. And you had no idea what the reference was. That was like a friend or something like this?
Yes.
So, like everything else, the first order of business is to connect. So when a person says to you, you're so great, what's your sense of what their intention is in saying it?
They're wanting to express appreciation about me in some way.
That's the strategy. And what's the purpose of expressing appreciation? What could be the motivation for that?
Connecting.
I am wondering if in any way part of your discomfort has to do with, at least I know for me it has sometimes happened when somebody says something like, you're so great, I actually experience a sense of separation, like they are ever so slightly putting themselves down.
You're being judged in some way. There's some judging going on.
It resonates for you.
Yes.
So the first thing that you might try is, you know, first of all, just to create ease, to say thank you, because clearly the person is trying to give you a gift. Just thank you. And then you can allow your curiosity to guide you. So here I am, I'm this person. Let's do like a micro role play. I'm this person. I say, Nancy, you're so great.
Thank you. But as you say that, I'm curious what...
Did you say but?
Hey, I don't remember. I guess I should say and.
No and or but. The thank you is a complete moment. It's really a powerful experience. If I am trying to give you a gift, for you to receive it. And then what can happen is as you try to receive it, you see that you're not able to receive it in full. Isn't that what your experience is?
Yes.
Then you can say, I'd like to receive your gift even more fully. You see?
Okay. But I'm pretty sure I wouldn't use those particular words.
Why not?
I'm not sure what I would.
Tell me why not. Not that I think you ought to say those words. I'm just...
Again, it's just a disconnection from the language. It's not language that people typically use.
What aspect of that language is it? Can you characterize what about this language?
It just has that same feel as when people use classical NVC language. People are uncomfortable around that.
So you are anticipating that somebody would be uncomfortable if you were to say to them, I want to receive the gift you're giving me more fully.
Yes.
Nikki, can I ask, I can so imagine other ways of saying that.
Sure.
I think I understand what Nancy is saying.
I would like to understand it too. I would like to learn whatever gift there is for me to learn about this. Because I do speak this way to people.
Yes, but you see, people are used to you speaking that way, so it would be...
Who is used to it?
...natural for people to hear you say that, but I typically don't speak that way.
Okay, so is it something about your own vulnerability that you're trying to protect? Because if I meet someone new, they're not necessarily used to it, and I speak like this to everyone. I don't speak the words feelings and needs and all of that stuff. I do speak a very kind of like passionate, vulnerable, intimate language with as many people as I find along my path. So I'm curious to learn what it is about it that is uncomfortable.
Probably because it just wouldn't occur to me to even be thinking along those lines. I might think more, I would like to understand what the heck they're talking about, because when somebody says, you're so great, I get the intention.
So why would you like to understand it? For what purpose?
Well, because if I'm creating some experience for them that they like, gee, would you like to be able to repeat that or know that that does impact people positively?
So it's more for your learning than for the connection in moment.
Yeah, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Then you say that. Then you say, that's really sweet to hear, and I am really curious to know what it is that I'm doing so that I can do more of it, learn more what it is and do more of it with other people.
Okay.
You tell me. You see, it's whatever it is, just say it.
Isn't it about the honesty from your heart, and then the words from our language? Like my way might be saying, gee, I really appreciate your saying that. I don't think I'd say, I'd like to receive your gift, or this is a gift, or something like that. I would put it in my own way of speaking, but it's about the honesty of saying what it is that we are experiencing.
I'm with you with one exception, which is when I say I really appreciate you saying this, I'm not making a link to why I want to ask for more information.
Right. I think I'd go from there.
Say what?
And perhaps say, well, let's say, I'd really appreciate your saying this. Would you be willing to tell me what it is that, what you found helpful?
What you are doing is you're appreciating and you're making a request that is not connected to how it would serve you to get this information. And since the very first thing that Nancy said is that she feels awkward about even asking for it, I'm trying to create a bridge for the asking by expressing the purpose of the asking. And so I'm not attached at all to my words. I'm trying to help Nancy find two things. One is, why does she really want to hear more specificity? And second, how can she express that nakedly? What's in her heart, nakedly? And I have a suspicion that the discomfort is double. It's the discomfort of asking for something that people may not be comfortable expressing, and the discomfort of exposing something. That's what my hunch is. Am I onto something, Nancy?
I'm not sure what it is that I'm afraid of exposing.
Then forget about what I said. Just tell me, what is it that would make it a little uncomfortable to express why you want to hear more words?
So when you say that, there's two things that happen for me. One is that I'm anticipating the person will have difficulty providing that information. And there's an awkwardness mostly for them.
Okay, so that's
and
one thing.
I wonder if they may, I mean, there is this sort of norm that we don't, it's almost like perceived as asking for praise or digging for compliments, you know, that sort of thing. Isn't it enough that I told you that you're great? Now you need for me to itemize why?
Got it. So it's an entirely different direction. It's about maintaining harmony
right.
with the other person in that moment. So then I could say exactly that, and I could say something like, you know, this may not be something, I want to ask you for something that you may not know the answer to it, and that's okay if you don't. It feels a little awkward anyway to ask for more information, and I just know that it will help me so much to learn if by any chance you can point to something specific. And if you can't, let it go. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. Eventually I will get this, because it's almost always simply saying what is really going on. And I think the challenge so often is just knowing what is really going on.
Yes. That's one challenge. The other challenge, you actually named it in passing, and I want to call attention to it, which is that to practice nonviolence, I'm not even talking about NBC, just the fundamental principles of nonviolence, means in some ways going against the norms. The norms of society are not nonviolent. The norms of society are about some amount of distance and some amount of pretense and some amount of toning down the truth. Not talking about lying, I'm just talking about not being too exuberant, not being too upset. If you're going to speak the truth from your heart and reach for connection at a more honest, intimate, heartfelt level, you're going to be going against the norms. I want to grant you that. And so then it's just a question, how far do you feel comfortable going there? Then it's matching that against your desire for learning and genuine connection. And moment by moment, you decide. I have a sense that now it's settling for you.
Yes, thank you. That's been very helpful for me.
Thank you. That was fun. Okay. I would like to move to the next bit, which came up in a variety of ways, which is the unexpected feedback. So the issue, as I see it, to begin with, kind of relates to some aspect of what Nancy said, which is the first problem is to know fast enough what is really going on for you to be able to say it. But sometimes, I know I have been in situations where somebody said something and went on for a while, whether it was feedback or not, it doesn't matter. And I just kind of like stood there and took it in, and only after it was over I realized that there was something off about it for me. I'm sure that's part of the challenge, is to know what's happening. Then the second is, if it's in a work situation, how to maneuver the moment when you realize that you want to tell somebody that their feedback in this moment is not welcome, even though you want it overall. So I'd like to just invite you to try out, how might you say this to someone? Assuming you figured out that you're shocked that this is not working for you in this moment, and this is, a supervisor, how would you say it? Just give it a try. Experiment with it so we can discover together. How might you say to a supervisor who comes to you and say, by the way, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I had something like that actually happen recently, where a supervisor came knocking at my door and began to give me feedback, though she didn't call it that, and was, I experienced her as agitated. And in thinking back on it, I'm thinking that what I could have done would have been to, when she came to my door and began, I could have said something like, please just give me a minute, I was working on something, please come in and sit down, and kind of position myself a little bit more with her. And say that now, you know, I want to really hear what it is that she has to say.
Mm-hmm.
So let me turn off the computer or whatever it is. For me, it's trying to do, in that situation, was trying to do something about the actual physical way that we were relating. Might have been one thing I could have done.
Yeah. So what I am getting from it is that this is a way of both preparing your physical environment, and also I'm hearing in the process these things take a few seconds and allow you to prepare emotionally without saying anything about it.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else? What else do you imagine being able to do? Or if you can't imagine anything, then what is it that gets in your way of knowing what to do?
It's more that first one of knowing fast enough what's going on for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's much more the tricky thing. What happens for me is it's more trying to flee because I'm so confused or shocked. Get out of the situation because I'm so shocked and surprised.
So how do you get out of the situation?
I had a situation where, in a work situation, where someone came along and gave me feedback that was so different from anything that I'd ever heard before about my work. And this was a person in a very powerful position for my future. And I wound up I'm ashamed in a way. I feel rather ashamed to say that I simply let the institution know that I wasn't willing to listen to this. I wasn't interested in that way of working that was being proposed, and I didn't want to go ahead with that feedback. So I felt afterwards that I'd really missed an opportunity. That's what happened in the moment because I was so dinged out from it. So it just came as such a surprise that I didn't really work it through properly.
When did you say that? While the feedback was happening?
No.
Afterwards?
No. Yes, afterwards.
So while it was happening, you didn't have enough self-awareness to know that something was going on that wasn't working for you.
Right. I sat there. It happened so unexpectedly. And I just sat there and felt I felt small. I felt shocked and powerless.
And did you know that you were feeling shocked and powerless?
I knew I was feeling shocked. That was about all I knew I was feeling.
Okay, so I have a sense that one of the things that we can all do is learn to notice that we are shocked and to recognize it as a signal to choose to do something. The very experience of shock can be the beginning of change. Turn it into a signal rather than background.
I'd love to do that, but by the time I'm shocked, I'm feeling so short of resource emotionally. So I'm feeling like you were saying too, that I feel diminished. It goes almost to pre-verbal. It's like there aren't even words sometimes.
Great. My experience is that I can train myself to do something in a situation where I lose my capacity to discern if I choose it ahead of time. Almost like if I had a flashcard.
You give an example?
Yes, like let's say right now we can build the example. So here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to go into small groups and brainstorm together. What would you like to say in a moment like this? Even though you don't think you're able to even remember, you don't have emotional resources, you will get petrified, it doesn't matter. Just to see if you can come up with the words of what you might say. If you had access to saying something, what would you want it to be? In a moment where you're shocked, there is someone with you who is in a position of power. You know that the stakes are not tiny. How would you ideally want to respond? All right, then I'll talk to you in 5 minutes.
I'm thinking of what I would want to say ideally.
Well, I know what I would like to say if there wouldn't be repercussions for me saying it. It's tough.
Tough for me too. because no matter what I say, I'm predicting I will not be received. So I'm likely to not say much of anything. It's not going to land. It's going to be a waste of time, and it'll probably make things worse.
I'm assuming that there is a thread of rapport that I have with this person. There's something. I'm just thinking that being honest is probably the, for me, would be the best way to go if I could. And I guess that would just be to say, this is hard for me to hear like this right now, or this is, I'm having difficulty hearing this. And that's not ideal, but that's kind of what I'm coming up with, would be to say something that was honest and straightforward. And then if that's the problem, well, at least I will have said something, which is better than being petrified, which is what can happen to me. I get a little paralyzed. Does that happen to you too?
Well, not so much in work situations where the expectations are clear, but in a particular set of relationships that I have that are in a nonprofit, where whose boss is not clear, who's making the decisions about what happens is not clear, whose way is to be is not clear. And so then it's...
I think that's a very good point, though, to be able to say something like, I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now, and I need time to think about what you're bringing, or something like that, as a kind of a standard line for such situations. I think that's what Nikki's saying, is to have something ready.
You have what you're saying, yeah. Like that she meant like a flashcard.
I guess what I'd really like to say is, and now is not a good time for me to take in what you want to talk about. What I'd like to do is set up an appointment where we can both discuss this. That's what I'd really like to say.
Welcome back. I am open to hearing what you came to.
I was in a breakout, and I wasn't sure who was talking about the situation, but what it sounded like to me was the situation she was describing was somebody just exploding. It sounded to me like the person wasn't necessarily in a place where they were offering feedback, and maybe that's a distinction that I hadn't really thought about before. There's a difference between somebody who's coming to you and just trying to dump a bunch of stuff and just venting, who might not actually be interested at all in helping you learn how to change or do something differently. It sounds like, you know, sometimes that might not be what's behind what's coming at you.
So what do you imagine is behind it?
Frustration and anger and, you know, I don't know what the actual situation was, but if I think about situations from my work, it could be insecurities, and there are a lot of things that I can, but not necessarily having to do with me, but more having to do with the work situation.
What do you imagine that the person wants in the moment of saying all these things to you?
I imagine that the person wants to be heard and wants understanding for their situation.
Great. So if you can remember in the moment that that's what they want, then you can give it to them by reflecting. Even this, you know, before you continue, I want to know, are you telling me all this because you want to be heard about your frustration? Immediately diffuses it. It takes presence, which when you're shocked, is hard to come by. I'm thinking that finding a way to express your shock is more reliably something that you can train yourself to say, and that could fit in many situations, than trying to hear and reflect and all of that, which are very active activities that require a lot of us. So in a moment like this, I'm not confident that without a great deal of training over many years that you will have access to it. I'm curious if anyone came up with something that you could imagine you might want to try in a moment.
I could imagine simply saying, I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now, and I'd like to postpone our discussion for and suggest a time when we could meet again,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Yeah, and that kind of a thing, with a couple of tweaks that I want to offer, is something, I want to say, it may sound funny, is something that you can memorize and have it available to you as if on a flashcard. And then it's like, okay, I'm shocked, it's time to say that thing. And you say it.
The only little thing that comes to me also is that I don't want to meet it another time.
Why not?
Well, in the situation that I'm thinking of, it arose because this other person came and spoke this stuff, but it was their thing. It wasn't something that I particularly wanted to be listening to.
Why not?
Because they had an expectation that I would transform myself according to their advice.
Hang on. I want to pause here and say I want to separate this as a separate piece, put this aside as a separate piece, and just imagine for a moment the simpler situation, which is you really just want to be emotionally prepared. And in that moment, you're not. And that you can practice saying something like this. You know, I'm feeling shocked. This is taking me by surprise. I really would like to speak at another time when I can be emotionally present. Can we reschedule? Are you open to rescheduling? Some version of this, you can train your organism to remember to say, in a moment of tension.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be really handy. Does that speak to people, or is there a concern that you have about it? Can you imagine that you can come up with a line that you can pretty much say in those kinds of situations and would feel good to you? Now I want to go into the deeper question, which is, let's say that somebody has an expectation that you would transform. For me, the question, for me personally, and you may not join me there, which is fine. For me, the question is, how do I open myself to transform whatever they're saying into the gift of learning for me, mm-hmm. and into the gift of possibly more connection with this person? So I release any idea that they should speak differently to me. And just make myself available, either in that moment or another moment, to hear so that I can do the translation and receive whatever would be helpful to me. Curious what that brings up, my framing it in this way.
I absolutely can imagine that that is the best way to go about it. The energy really needs to be there for me to do that.
And that's why you want to reschedule it as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The sooner you reschedule, the less toxic energy you absorb, the less you need to work through to be prepared for it the next time. I'm curious for any comments on this radical notion from others.
But how soon as quickly as possible? 10 minutes?
No. 30 seconds.
What is 30 seconds?
Between when you realize that what the person is doing right now in your current state is toxic to you.
Oh, okay.
And when you speak up and say, let's talk another time.
Oh, okay.
What the least amount of time that it would take you to get enough presence to be able to say your rehearsed line. And your rehearsed line is some version of, you know, I can see there's something important here for you to say to me. I want to be in a state where I can hear it and make use of it, and right now I'm not. So let's reschedule. There's nothing offensive about it. Now I want to go back to Nancy for some reason, and I'm wondering if that line is also one that you can't imagine saying.
There's a couple of things I guess I'm wrestling with a little bit. I'm recognizing that in the situation that I'm thinking of, that both this president and myself had lost connection with our rational minds. You know, that when you're flooded with emotions of some kind, you're just not operating from your prefrontal cortex. For sure, for anything good to come from any of it, one of us needs to get connected to our rational mind.
I have a bit of a hiccup with the word rational here, because there's so many assumptions about rational being better than emotional.
Just referring to our prefrontal cortex. We need to be able to operate.
The word that I would prefer to insert instead is to operate from conscious choice. Can you accept that tweak?
Well, yes and no, because obviously there are certain parts of my brain that I need to access in order to experience that choice. So that's really what I'm talking about.
Great. So as long as we are connected, that our purpose is to access conscious choice, and for you the metaphor that works is part of brain. For somebody else, the metaphor that works is tapping into my heart. For somebody else, the metaphor that works is being in my body. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I guess I don't want to belabor it. It's just that the knowing of that physiologically, there's certain parts of our brain that we have to access in order to be able to make choices.
Yeah, so I just want to leave it open for people to have whatever language and framing works for them. In terms of, for me, it wouldn't work to think, how do I access my prefrontal lobes? For me, it worked very well to talk about how do I go inward fast enough to connect. We're talking about the same thing. It's just that your metaphor doesn't speak to me. And so I want to leave open the possibility that for different people, different aspects of the process of self-connection would be more or less meaningful.
I'm not 100% sure that we're talking about the same thing, so I guess that's why I'm willing to just let it go. Anyway, I do know that I need to pause in some way and get connected in some way before anything that I might want to happen will happen.
Yes. So at the very least, one thing that you can almost always say to someone is, please give me a few seconds to get oriented to this, like Karen said at the beginning. Before you continue in any way, just I want a few seconds of silence. And that gives you an opportunity to go prefrontal, to go heart, to go body, to go whatever it is, so you can access that place of choice.
Yes, and your question was whether I would see myself saying that. In this moment, I'm not sure, and I think in lots of situations that might work. Given the huge power difference, the fact that we're in a meeting full of people, obviously there's a show going on for them. Be able to do that or not, I don't know, but it'd be nice to think I could.
Great. So now I want to go back to the piece that we put on the side for a moment. The thing, like, you never want to hear from them.
Right. But I think you pretty much touched on that, because it's clear that there's something going on in me if I don't want to hear from them. It's fear.
And that's the piece about overcoming our defensiveness and stepping towards a situation to embrace it. It's one of the bigger challenges is to come to a place of sufficient self-acceptance that what you say about me doesn't knock me out.
That's the key, self-acceptance, so that what is said doesn't knock one out, exactly. And I guess I was shaken in my self-acceptance, my self-assurity, or whatever the word is.
Yeah. So often what happens when our self-acceptance is not solid, we go into kind of a loop of almost like magical thinking, sort of like, I have to get you out of here so that I don't have to think that what you say might be true. And that doesn't really protect my self-acceptance. It just fends off the moment of where it comes in. The place of self-acceptance that I'm talking about is, I want to imagine for a moment that every single thing that this person says about me is true. and to still accept myself. So let's take a moment and see if anybody is willing to put out what is something that would be really hard for you to accept that somebody may have said about you at some point.
I think one of the things that's really hard is if it's something that is a misunderstanding and you know it's a misunderstanding. You know what your own motives were in doing something.
Yes.
And they are saying that your motives are different and not accepting anything else.
So one of the hardest things for you is an attribution of motives that you don't recognize in yourself.
Absolutely.
That's a hard one for many of us, present company included.
Part of that for me, too, just to add on, is when it's gone a little step further for me of that it's hard to hear that I may even have had an intention to do harm or intention to cause disruption.
Attribution of motivation that is not recognizable by you, especially if it's attribution of malicious intent. So if we were to push the point for the practice, this is not about agreeing with a person. For the practice of increasing self-acceptance, here is how it goes for me. If I reject it so strongly that I could possibly have malicious intent, then what I see in that is that my self-acceptance is based on believing that I could never possibly have malicious intent. It's brittle. Whether or not it's true, I want to exercise in practice, like, okay, let's say that I did have malicious intent, even if I think it's not true. How could I accept myself if I had malicious intent? Think about that. There's so many people in the world that at one point or another in their lives have had malicious intent in an action that they took. If we can't accept that in ourselves, how could any human being ever accept that in themselves? It's as if we're saying that only certain things are human and others are not. So instead, what I want to do is to say, okay, let's say I had malicious intent. What need could possibly lead me to have malicious intent? That is the path towards self-acceptance. So then it's not so much that I would agree with the person that I had malicious intent. It's that I won't have the defensive tension of fending it off. I could breathe and sit in curiosity. I can breathe and receive the person. I can breathe and empathize. I can breathe and reflect back what I'm hearing without getting agitated, because I don't have to put so much energy into proving that I'm not what they say. I'm curious if there's any appeal in this picture.
This is really great. I really like the honesty of it. This is just very helpful. It's made me feel quite thoughtful, actually.
Yeah. It's a very deep practice.
It's also being willing to trust in whatever might result, because in acknowledging whatever it is about ourselves, something might happen.
Yeah, and the key is, it's not that I have to accept that it's true about me. It's that I want to stretch to say, so what if it were to be true? Why would I reject myself if that were true of me? Then would I also not accept anyone else who has ever had malicious intent?
Nikki, I'm wondering, when you said just now about, so what if it's true, if I had that, it sounded like from everything that's been said before, though, and I have to just say this as well for myself, that doesn't mean that I haven't really taken it and reflected on. In other words, I'm not just passing it off. Like, well, so what? That's if it's true or not. It doesn't really matter. But that seems to come after having reflected.
Yeah. Yes, the reflection, it's actually, it's something that allows the reflection to be as fully honest as it can be. Because if there is so much heat in me about no way will I accept that this could be true of me, then my reflection is constrained. Then my reflection is designed to prove that it's not true. I want to be able to say, you know, like, is it possible? Is it possible that somewhere in me there could be malicious intent that I may be unconscious of? Of course I would be unconscious of it if it were there, because I'm so completely opposed to the idea. So the only way that I can explore myself more fully is to try it on and work my way through it by saying, okay, so let's say I had malicious intent, and again, go to the needs. That's the path of acceptance. What need could I possibly have that would lead me to have malicious intent? And once you connect with that need, you can release the intense agitation, the heat of like, no way, this is not me. Because you can accept the need and you can mourn the possibility that you might have done something with malicious intent. And then there is a softening that happens. And then back to the conversation, instead of telling the person, that is not true, that is just absolutely not true, this is all your stuff, go get help, you can say and mean it, you know, I have reflected on this, I've done a lot of work about this and I reflected on it. I don't have any sense that this is true of me, and I'm still appreciating that you are willing to do the uncomfortable thing of saying this, and I really want to connect with you about it. So you're still saying it's not true. You're not resisting. You're honoring, you're respectful towards self and other at the same time. Wow, that was quite a deep exploration for me, and I'm curious to maybe hear from how you are doing.
Hearing what you're saying lets me get out of the idea that I'm perfect, that my persona is perfect, and I'll take your feedback in, but I'm the one that's perfect here, you know.
Yeah.
So then I can, like you were saying, the softening happens. It's just a general, like, oh, yeah, I'm just human, and we're all just bozos on this bus, and I don't have to be that positional. Let my persona run the show rather than my spirit can run the show, my heart can run the show.
I love hearing this. Thank you.
I'm really struck by how much this gets me to go beyond what I think of as feedback and just to any situation, really, that number one, it's good to have something rehearsed to say when you're ever taken off guard, whether it's a feedback situation or not. And number two, the idea of really sitting with what somebody has to say and not judging it as to whether it's true or not right off the bat.
Thank you. And one other thing that helps is to have the other version of understanding that what somebody says is about them. Not in the sense of it's their stuff, there's something wrong with them. It's more in the sense of what they're telling me is information about their needs, disguised as dumping anger and frustration on me. It reminds me of what Marshall Rosenberg used to say. I remember hearing from him many times that human beings have only two messages that we make, please and thank you. And so whenever somebody dumps on you, it's a please. And so if I can hear what the please is, which is to be heard overall, and then in the content, so they're telling me that I have, you know, sabotage their project and I have done all these awful things that ruined the team. I'm just making it up. What I'm hearing in that in terms of needs is they want care, loyalty, and team building. That's what's important to them. So all of these things are in preparation for having enough connection where I feel comfortable asking for the specifics, because that is the only place where learning will happen. So if I can say to someone, okay, I get something and I want to check with you, I get that what's important to you is that we treat each other with care. We have loyalty to the project and prioritize team building. Did I get that right? And if they say yes, then you can say, you know, I share these values. I really want to learn how to do this. It will help me enormously if you can tell me what you saw me do that didn't align with those values for you. That's when you turn it into feedback, when you can make that move. Was that too big of a jump, Susan?
No, not at all. I'm with you. And yeah, I think that's what I'm getting to. So thank you for that. I'm also getting my head around what you had said earlier of releasing an expectation of how I think a person should talk to me. Instead of thinking, you know, how dare he come to me like this? How dare he speak to me? Like, doesn't he show me some respect? To be able to move into a place where instead of reacting against how the person is speaking, to really see beyond it to what you were saying about that person's way of expressing their needs.
Yes, thank you. That's really, really sweet to hear it like this. I am right in these moments, not like while we're speaking, just in these days. I am in the situation of responding to someone who, in my opinion, has a misperception about something that happened here in the Bay NVC community and is very upset about it and has taken action that is affecting us negatively. And there is in me a lot of annoyance, that, you know, in the form of why not check with us first before you take action? And what is it about NVC that you don't get in terms of connection before taking any punitive action or whatever? I'm giving you the core, you know, at the judgmental level. And I decided that I was going to really make myself available to hear this person. And as I heard this person, all of this is happening on email, which makes it even harder. As I responded to this person and named the pain and the needs that I'm hearing, and then this morning I went for a walk with a friend and I related the situation to her, I suddenly realized through doing this, that there is some action that I can take that might make things better independently of the truth of what this person is saying. I don't really want to get into the details because they're messy. It's just that exhilaration of through making myself available to the feedback, learning a way of doing things that will make the whole situation better. That's the potential gift in taking in the upset from another person, even though they're not presenting it as in a way that I recognize as feedback, even if I'm upset about how they're saying it. Was that helpful at all to hear?
It's really helpful. And I look at a situation where it was only after everything was, like, it was kind of a gang thing in my situation too. And it was only afterwards that I saw ways that could make it better. And I regret that in the actual dump session that I didn't probably appear all that receptive, but rather defensive for sure. Just kind of saying, well, no. Because I think if there was that receptiveness in the session itself, then when change takes place, people would be more likely to see it as connected with learning something from it.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so now what I would like to do is I would like you to go back into your groups, and there's another little piece of practice that I want you to do, which is to kind of like to put it all together without a big amount of upset. Just one or two of you can practice being the boss, let's say. And imagine what the specific is that the person did, but don't say it. Instead, give some judgmental evaluation. And the person who is receiving the feedback, try to participate in the role play in a way that invites the specific so that you can shift it from being criticized to receiving useful feedback. So, for example, let's say that I'm imagining that you are, you know, an administrative assistant and I'm the boss and you didn't respond to an email that I sent you with an urgent request to contact so-and-so and tell them that I was coming late for a meeting. And instead of saying this, what I say to you is, you're just completely unreliable as an admin assistant. I can't believe what you're doing. And then you are receiving this, and your job is to role play with me to the point where you ask me for the specific in a way that I will feel comfortable giving it to you. Let me know if you have any questions about the instructions. I want to do that for about 10 minutes and then just do a little bit of harvest and open it up to any lingering questions about any of the topics about feedback. Okay.
Hey, who's the boss?
And we're going to be using this example that Mickey gave about the email, right?
Yep. Give it a try, boss.
Then I'll be the employee.
So I'm just disgusted. I can't believe that you've let me down again. You're so unreliable.
This is hard for me to hear right now. I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, if you were doing your job, you would know.
I find what Nikki just said about those two messages of please, thank you, you know, that's really important.
Okay. It's sounding to me that you're not feeling supported. Are you you know, frustrated with me that I, well, can you give me something to work with again? Can you berate me a little bit?
Sure. You know, you're totally unreliable.
Well, I want to be viable and supportive of you. It's sounding to me like you're frustrated with.
Yes. I've just about had it.
I do want to support you, but if you can tell me more what I need to do that.
Can I say something? I'd just like to throw something in there. I hear you kind of almost apologetic. And I think it's more about hearing the person's need. I don't think you need to be apologetic. It's more about they need to know that their need is recognized.
Yeah, I'm having some difficulty with that.
Go for the need.
Well, this organization should have been further down the pike from where we are right now. It's really going to show in our bottom line.
It sounds like the... You really, you know, want to, do the job that you have to do to well and to carry out your responsibilities well. And
I really want a place to flourish.
I can hear that. I can hear that that's very important to you to see that happen. You want to see the best for the company.
Yes. So then you could say something like, I want that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would suggest something like, so are you needing a sense of reliability from your employees? Or are you needing to be able to trust that when you send out an email that I'm going to respond quickly?
Yeah, I like that second one. Are you needing to trust that when you send out an email or communication that I'll respond quickly to your request?
Sounds kind of distant, like hoity-toity.
Sounds.
I really need some cooperation around here. I really need to know we're a whole team. That's what I need.
You know, I hear that, and I am one of your team members. I do want to support you with that and with the project. So I understand that if I, you know, respond more quickly to your emails, that is going to better support the team, and I do want to do that. I hear that that is very important to you.
Yeah, that sounds like groveling. Let's see.
I think it's more a matter of asking, so would it help you if I...
That feels better, yeah.
Yeah. Would it help you if I checked my emails more often?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think maybe let's set up a schedule that I can count on that you'll be checking your emails every 2 hours.
Okay.
Now, let's hear if anybody came up with anything that you liked in doing this, or anything that you learned from doing this.
I really enjoyed having a chance to replay something that did happen to me, because I had a chance to experience what it can be like to, on the one hand, express interest and concern and caring about how the other person, the boss, what they are needing, and at the same time really feel authentic, because it's, I know where I was, I know what I was doing. They don't, they didn't, they still don't, but it's okay because I'm letting them know that I'm there for them.
Cool. Anyone else? Was there anything that you learned or that was satisfying in any way, or any questions? I guess I would just like to hear from anyone, even just one line. Did you have useful practice, even if you don't have anything else to say about it?
Well, yeah, we had very useful practice, and we paused and replayed until we got it right, until we got to a place where it wasn't sticky anymore, where it was, you know, clean and fun and
wonderful. I'm really glad to hear this. So we have about 7 minutes before this entire series is over, and I would like to give you a few of those minutes to ask any question, either about today or about the entire series, any of the topics around feedback that are still lingering for you.
Well, I'm curious how often people invite feedback as just a regular practice instead of it being this horrendous event.
Ah, this is reminding me, thank you that you're bringing it up, because this is reminding me that there was a piece that didn't get addressed, which is where there is a situation where, you know, people go for months without giving feedback, and then, of course, it explodes in the end. So the piece that I can say is the invitation requires overcoming the inertia, putting my head in the sand. I know there's something there. I see something not flowing so well, and I don't want to ask about it because it'll make things worse. So we need to learn to overcome this through all the practices that we've talked about today, you know, like relaxing into self-acceptance, curiosity, interest, and the understanding that creating more connection with the other person will ultimately result in a better outcome. And then approach a person and say something like, it looks to me like there is loss of rapport, loss of flow between us. And I am curious if you are willing to tell me what it is about, because I really so value having smooth working relations in my office. So would you tell me? I really want to hear and see what happens. Okay. Any other questions?
Mickey, I have a comment. It really struck me, or it has been striking me, about how far-reaching the application of this can be. And it brought me back to something you said in the first session, which was that we're constantly asking for feedback, but we're so afraid of what we might hear that instead we ask for reassurance instead of feedback. You know, it's just been really wonderful for me to have this come back full circle to that first session, and it feels very complete to me.
Great. I'm really loving this. Thank you. So I'm going to do a closing circle. What are you taking with you from this series?
I'm taking the confidence to really face what's going on.
Thank you.
I'm taking away being present in the moment.
I'm taking the warmth that can be in this whole situation of feedback.
Thank you.
I'm taking away, if it were to be true, so what?
I'm taking away looking at feedback as an opportunity to learn.
They all sound exactly what I'm taking away. I guess courage, that connection is more important than worrying about consequences.
Thank you.
I was particularly taking the piece you did tonight about accepting yourself and so what if it is true, as someone said.
And what I am taking is just the joy of being able to break down such a complex topic as feedback into manageable, digestible chunks and have people leave the class with more confidence and reassurance about their capacity than they started. That gives me a great deal of pleasure, and I enjoyed working with you all, and I am delighted that we did this, and bye-bye.